Black History Month acknowledges the historical achievements of African Americans. Born and bred from Negro History Week, the annual event was launched in 1915 by historian Dr. Carter G. Woodson as a way to honor the triumphs and struggles of African Americans throughout U.S. history. The month of February was chosen to coincide with celebrating the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. While we honor many, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. steadfastly remains one of the most significant figures in American history. The Baptist minister, scholar, civil rights activist, and Nobel Peace Prize winner played a pivotal role in the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In 1968, on April 4th, King was assassinated while standing on the balcony of the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. A life was severed as a legacy was born. While King's impact on race relations in the United States is well documented, little is known about the integral role St. Augustine played in the civil rights movement and the signing of the Civil Rights Act. The St. Augustine movement, led by Dr. Robert B. Haling, is recognized as one of the many sparks that ignited the signing of the Civil Rights Act. Haling's achievements, accomplished at great personal expense, are forever woven in St. Augustine's rich tapestry of history. WOKV sought out the assistance of David Nolan, a local historian, author, and friend of Haling, to learn more about the man who worked closely with Reverend King to change the course of American history. Nolan arrived in St. Augustine more than 50 years ago. Once settled and ready to find out everything he could about the part America's oldest city played in the civil rights era, he was surprised to discover little documentation about St. Augustine's chapter in the civil rights movement. This very important time frame in American history had been, as he said, swept completely underneath the rug. He quickly sought the assistance of Haling, the local dentist hailed as the father of St. Augustine's civil rights movement. Haling had worked closely with King and local activists to end the ancient city's rabid segregation laws, but Haling had long departed from Lincolnville, St. Augustine's predominantly black neighborhood located west of the railroad. Not only were there repeated attempts on his life, the violence ensued by the Ku Klux Klan and white segregationists had completely destroyed Haling's dental practice. Aware that Haling returned often, Nolan patiently waited. The wait lasted more than 15 years. When they finally did meet, Nolan learned that Haling secretly visited his former home because, as he said, the same people who wanted me dead back then are still here. Nolan and Haling remained good friends until Haling's passing in 2015. To this day, Nolan remembers his friend with reverence.
I am so grateful that Dr. Haling lived, and I am so grateful that I had the opportunity to know him, and I am so grateful that St. Augustine was the place that he chose to launch his dental practice, because otherwise so much American history might not have played out the way it did.
Haling was born and raised in Tallahassee. The well-educated, soft-spoken man told Nolan that he always knew that he wanted to become a dentist.
After he graduated from college, served in the U.S. Air Force as an officer, but he'd always wanted to be a dentist, so the chance finally came. And in those days, there was not a dental school in the state of Florida, and it was the age of racial segregation. What they did was, if you were white, the state would give you a scholarship to go to Emory University Dental School in Atlanta, and if you were black, they would give you a scholarship to go to Meharry Medical College in Nashville, Tennessee. So Dr. Haling took the scholarship, went to Meharry, and one of the conditions of the scholarship was that after you graduated, you had to spend 5 years working in a medically underserved area of Florida. So when he graduated from dental college, he came back to Florida, and he told me he did a tour of the state. He went to Pensacola and kept on through Tallahassee, where he'd grown up, and went down to the Florida Keys, back up the East Coast. And when he finished this grand tour, he decided there were two places that he might settle in Florida, and one was Panama City, and the other was St. Augustine. And I've often reflected on how different would American history have been if Dr. Haling had settled in Panama City instead of St. Augustine and missed that entire civil rights episode that changed our history.
Upon his arrival to St. Augustine in 1960, Haling was shocked to discover the KKK's formidable presence. Determined to rectify the power struggle dominated by white racists, the former Air Force officer followed in King's footsteps, spearheading peaceful protests and marches. In 1963, his efforts were met with brutal violence. While observing a Klan rally, Haling and three fellow activists James Jackson, Clyde Jenkins, and James Hauser were struck with chains and clubs, stacked like cordwood, and rescued within minutes of being lynched and burned. Despite his broken ribs, a maimed hand, and the loss of 11 teeth, Haling was fined for assault. Haling shared the horrific details with Nolan.
Leaflets had been put about around town saying there was going to be a Ku Klux Klan rally south of town, and they wanted to see if a crowd would turn out for this, and they drove by and they got trapped in a dirt road and taken out under armed guard and then beaten in front of the crowd while there was a traveling racist evangelist named Reverend Connie Lynch, and he was there saying things that are probably not fit to say on the air today, but they were as vile and foul as anything you can hear, and all involved with Dr. Haling being dead at the end of the time. There was, however, a ringer in the crowd. There was a white minister from Daytona Beach named Irwin Cheney, and he had come up to, again, check on this Ku Klux Klan rally, not because he was a Ku Klux Klanman. And when he saw this beating and he saw people being sent out to get gasoline to set these people on fire, he made his way out to a telephone and called every law enforcement figure he could think of. And finally, the sheriff came in at the very last moment and said, okay, that's enough of this. And Dr. Haling, as long as he lived, had to have x-rays to make sure there was not brain damage from the beating he had received. Many of his teeth were knocked out. And somebody said, in fact, one of the women in the crowd said, he's a dentist. Break his hands. Break his hands. I mean, this was unfortunately part of the St. Augustine of 1963.
Haling was sent to a Jacksonville hospital to recuperate.
Well, people did not think that he would be safe in the hospital in St. Augustine, because in those days, a lot of the doctors in St. Augustine were members of a group called the John Birch Society, which thought that Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement was a big communist plot. So Dr. Haling was taken to Brewster Hospital, the black hospital in Jacksonville, to be treated, because it was felt he would be safer there than he would be in St. Augustine.
No one would be held to task for beating the local dentist. The brutality, however, only fueled a man Nolan describes as mild-mannered.
His attitude on a lot of things was, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And he didn't want any shame on him. There was one of the events that brought Dr. Haling to both fame and notoriety in St. Augustine was that at this same time, St. Augustine was planning to celebrate its 400th birthday as the nation's oldest city. And a lot of white people here thought this was the most important thing in the world. And they got President Kennedy to appoint a national commission with people like Henry Ford II on it and everything. And they were going to have a huge birthday party for the nation's oldest city. And they didn't want to hear about any of this civil rights stuff. You know, that doesn't matter. The important thing is our birthday. So the first of the buildings that was restored there on St. George Street was to be dedicated by Lyndon Johnson, and they were going to have a banquet for him at the fanciest place in town, the Ponce de Leon Hotel. And it was for whites only, because this is the way things were done then. And Dr. Haling led protests and said, no, no, Ms. President Johnson, don't come to St. Augustine and take part in an all-white event. And a lot of negotiations took place, and finally they said, look, we'll get some black people to attend that banquet at the Ponce de Leon Hotel if you promise not to picket us when we go there, because President Lyndon Johnson did not want to have to cross a picket line to go into this ceremony. And they said, and we'll get the city officials to sit down with you and talk about your grievance as well. So Dr. Haling went into the dinner with others, but when it came time for the city officials to meet with them, no dice. The city officials would never meet with them. And Dr. Haling took away from that, you know, the idea. He said, we lost our leverage at that point. Lyndon Johnson left town. There was no more pressure on the city leaders from that source, and we were left holding the bag. And he vowed never to get left like that again. And once the Civil Rights Act passed through Congress, they said, okay, well, now will you promised not to have any more demonstrations. And it hadn't been signed yet. It had passed. There's a legislative process. It had passed the House and it had passed the Senate, but the president hadn't signed it. And Dr. Haling said, no, I've been there before. I've seen what Lyndon Johnson can do. I will not promise to not have demonstrations until that bill is signed by the president and in law. And this annoyed some people, as many things Dr. Haling did annoyed them. But thank God for the country. There was going to be no last-minute trickery here. It was going to be signed, sealed, and delivered on the law of the land. And Dr. Haling just kept pushing right on until it was.
While media publicity was essential for spotlighting the civil rights movement on the local and national stage, one sensationalized misquote caused Haling to lose supporters.
After Medgar Evers, who was the NAACP field secretary in Mississippi, was shot in his driveway and killed in 1963, Dr. Haling got a lot of bad publicity because he was quoted in the newspaper as saying, "We will shoot first and ask questions later." And Dr. Haling, as long as he lived, and I talked with him, you know, just shortly before his death, said he never said that. That what he said was that he would defend himself with all the vim and vigor at his disposal. And he felt that that misquotation was intentional and designed by people who wanted to discredit the civil rights movement. And it drove him crazy because, of course, since it was out there, it got requoted and requoted and put in books and stuff. And he said, "I never said that. I swear I never said that."
In February of 1964, Haling was forewarned of the potential of an impending KKK attack. While his pregnant wife, young daughter, and the family dog were, as he thought, safe in their Lincolnville home, he safeguarded his dental office.
Local people of Ku Klux Klan persuasion went around and tried to do some damage to people whose names had become notorious to them for their civil rights support. And ironically, Dr. Haling told me he thought they were going to attack his dental office, so he was over there. But his wife was home, very pregnant, sitting on the couch, and a shotgun blast came through the door, and she would have been killed. The dog was killed. She had had to, being pregnant, run to the bathroom real quickly. If she had still been sitting in that couch, she would have been hit by some of what was fired into the door. There's an iconic photograph that shows Dr. Haling the next day pointing to the bullet holes in the door, and the sheriff's department took the door as evidence, and it was never returned to him. So you can only see it in those old photographs at the time.
As the peaceful coastal city became anything but, Haling called on Dr. King for assistance. King summoned the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to descend with him on St. Augustine to publicly showcase the city's rabid segregation policies. As King and Haling gathered local leaders and Lincolnville residents to peacefully march in protest through sit-ins and wait-ins, white activists continued to retaliate. King was then arrested as he attempted to eat at a St. Augustine Bayfront restaurant in the Monson Moda Lodge, the Moda Court that housed the media. Designated for whites only, he was charged with trespassing. His incarceration fueled students to protest, and indeed they did. This time, however, the repercussions for their actions would spark a public outrage.
So the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that was being filibustered against in Congress included putting an end to segregated hotels and motels and restaurants. And St. Augustine at that time had nothing but segregated hotels and motels and restaurants. So we were a target to show what was wrong with that way of doing things. So, on the other hand, they also knew that if you did something one day, it was on the front page. And if you did it the same thing the next day, it would be on the back page of the paper. And if you did it a third day, it wouldn't be in the paper at all. It wouldn't be news. So they would hold strategy meetings in Dr. Haling's dental office every night, and they'd say, "What can we do next that will be new and slightly different so it will be news and we'll get the coverage that we want to show why the old way of segregation has to go?" And so one night somebody said, "Well, you know, the Monson Motel has a swimming pool. Why don't we have a swim in there?" And this was discussed with people, and it was said, "That's a pretty good idea." And then I was told that as the meeting broke up, they looked around that room and realized there was nobody in that room who knew how how to swim. But Hosea Williams, who was one of Dr. King's firebrands, who was down here during the civil rights day, said, well, I know some black people in Georgia who know how to swim, and I'll send for them, and we can do it. So here was this plan. This car with Georgia license plates was going to pull up next to the Monson Pool and disgorge several people in bathing suits who would jump in the pool. And at the same time, they had two white civil rights workers who had secretly registered as guests at the Monson Motel. They were not known in town, so they registered as guests because in those days there was a legal fiction that if you were a guest at a motel, you could have company come in and use the facilities. So here were these two whites who were registered guests, and they would run out and jump in the swimming pool with the black people who came down from Georgia, and the whites would say, it's okay, there are guests, there are guests. And the manager of the Monson Motel, who was at that time also the president of the Florida Hotel and Motel Association, redefined Southern hospitality by taking muriatic acid and pouring it all around the pool, saying, this is acid, this is acid.
A photographer captured the image.
The most famous photograph ever taken in St. Augustine, showing the pouring of the acid while an integrated group is swimming in the pool. And that photograph appeared on the front page of the Washington, D.C. newspaper the day the U.S. Senate went to vote on passing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So if there was any wavering vote, they would just have to look at that horrible picture and say, this is not the America we want. We have to pass that law.
Hayling would eventually leave St. Augustine, not in surrender, but in the need to properly care for his family.
Dr. Hayling was ramrod straight. He was straight in his posture. He was straight in his actions. He was straight in his values. He kept his eyes on the prize, as the old freedom song says. And so the fact that he was beaten, that his house was shot up, did not deter him. He kept right on. One of the ironies is he had this dental practice, which was his livelihood and the livelihood of his family. But after all these events in the civil rights movement, patients were afraid to come to him. They said, we're not going to go there. We may be blown up by dynamite when we sit in his dental chair because these crazy people hate him so much. So his dental practice was destroyed in St. Augustine. And he moved down to near Cape Kennedy, the Space Center, because the space boom was going on, and practiced there for several years. And then when the space race ended, he moved on to Fort Lauderdale, where he spent the remaining decades of his life.
But St. Augustine did not forget Hayling.
He really saw St. Augustine at its very worst. And the irony is that he lived to become the most honored citizen in St. Augustine's history. He received the city's highest award. He had a street named for him. There are historic markers on the two houses where he lived. His dental office in 2014 became the first civil rights museum in the state of Florida. And after his death in 2015, a 9-acre park at the south end of the city was named Dr. Robert B. Hayling Freedom Park in his honor.
Nolan remembers the ceremony to rename a Lincolnville street.
I remember participating in the ceremony to rename the street where he had first lived in St. Augustine, and where his house had been shot up, and his pet dog had been killed, and his wife had narrowly escaped being shot. And in 2003, that street was renamed Dr. R.B. Hayling Place, and there was a huge banner over the street. They had traffic closed off that day, and it said, Dr. Robert B. Hayling, father of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So this is really his great glory in American history, is that one of the most important laws in our entire history as a nation, that Civil Rights Act of 1964, came directly out of the streets of St. Augustine and the movement led by Dr. Robert B. Hayling at great personal cost to him in the 1960s.
The accolades continued to mount.
He was a dentist by profession. He wasn't, you know, a full-time civil rights leader or anything like this, but because he was the right man in the right place and the right time, he's probably the most historically significant dentist in all of American history, because through his actions, he helped to bring about that landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964. I remember in his later years, school children would all him and asked for his autograph, and he always signed it the same way. He said, "Never give up, Dr. R.B. Hailing." So that I have a little sign out on my patio that I can see from where I'm sitting now, and it says, "Never give up, Dr. R.B. Hailing," in memory of him.
As noted, Hailing had a 9-acre park with panoramic views of the San Sebastian and Matanzas Rivers named after him. He also received Florida's A&M University's Distinguished Alumni Award and Florida Memorial University's Nathan W. Collier Meritorious Service Award. Florida State Senator Tony Hill created a namesake award of valor in honor of Hailing, and the city of St. Augustine honored him with two of its highest awards, the Dei Avilis Award in 2011 and the Order of La Florida in 2013. To date, Hailing is the only person to receive both awards. He was also the first Black dentist to be elected to the local, regional, and state bodies of Florida's American Dental Association. Nolan added that Hailing was duly honored in 2014, a year before his passing.
In 2014, Dr. Hailing, along with James Weldon Johnson and A. Philip Randolph, two people who figure importantly in Jacksonville history, was inducted into the Florida Civil Rights Hall of Fame. So today, if you go to see the governor of Florida, you walk in the front door of the Capitol, you turn left, and before you get to the governor's door, you have Dr. Hailing peering down at you from the wall as one of the members of the Florida Civil Rights Hall of Fame. And when they had the ceremony there, he said, "You know, by the way, I used to mow the lawn here at the Capitol when I was a kid."
Nolan affectionately remembered Hailing's presence in St. Augustine.
Dr. Hailing never gave up, but that fuel came from within him. He was one of those people. If he had never known anybody else who would go along with him, he would have pursued till the end. And in fact, he did. He was a moving force, even in his 80s, when the drive from Fort Lauderdale to St. Augustine was a significant thing. He would always come here for any event that would help to promote civil rights and the recognition of Black history and the importance of the struggle that had taken place in St. Augustine. I remember that on his 80th birthday, we unveiled a Freedom Trail marker on his home at 160, what is now 160 Martin Luther King Avenue. And it is one of my fondest memories. What a wonderful birthday present to give to a man who had given so much to St. Augustine.
Nolan acknowledged the importance of the role St. Augustine played in the civil rights movement.
American South became a battlefield, you know, in the first half of the 1960s, and many, many battles were fought, and here in St. Augustine, it gave us a great history lesson. You know, it's not always pleasant to be the place where history is made, but that's in the nature of things. To me, this is St. Augustine's greatest contribution to American democracy, because it not only changed St. Augustine, it changed the country, and it inspired the world. And what a thing to be proud of.
Lucia Vitti, 104.5 WOKV.